Welcome to the Fusion Community Churches podcast. For more information about our church, please visit our website at fusioncommunitychurch.org. Here's this week's message from Pastor Andrew Fetter.
This morning, I want to welcome you to Fusion Community Church this morning as we have our launch Sunday today of meeting here and changing our name and just a lot of transition in the life of the church, a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, and we are so thankful that you chose to worship with us today. We pray that God would kind of connect you with some other people here. We are all looking all the time for friends, people we can kind of walk through life together with, at the same time looking for direction from God, and that's what we're all about. Hopefully you received a bulletin as you came in this morning with a pen attached. Inside, for those of you that are regulars, the communication card looks quite a bit different. It lays out differently. So this communication card is a way for you to communicate with the church as a whole. If there's prayer requests going on in your life, if you'd like pastoral contact of some kind, and also a place at the top for you to communicate with us if you are a guest, just a little bit of information about you and your family that we could just kind of reach out and make ourselves available. We're not going to bombard you with a bunch of information. We just want to be able to drop an email that says, hey, thanks for worshiping with us. We'd love to get your feedback on this morning, and we'd just like to say, hey, is there anything we can do to minister to the needs in your family? So check out that bulletin at some point. There is one thing I want to draw attention to. All of our life groups, which life groups is what we call where life happens, is a place to kind of more directly connect and build friendships. It's hard to do that in a room this size with this many people. We can kind of have passing conversations, but we can't really go any deeper and build relationships with people similar to us or similar in a life situation. So we have life groups, and they're kicking off in 2 weeks on Sunday, February 5th. You actually have the opportunity to go to our website, and you can actually browse like a menu under the Grow tab where it says Life Groups. You can actually browse a menu of all the groups that are being offered, the people that are teaching them or leading them or facilitating them. We've got some for couples, some for men, some for women. We've got one that's a new one that we're going to do for families, for families with younger children, school-age kids. And so you can actually bring the kids with you. You don't have to find your own babysitter. And so we're kind of trying that as a new experiment as well. So you'll want to check those out. Those are just different smaller collections of people where you can kind of spend a little more time getting to know some people throughout the body of Christ. So take a look at that at some point during the message. You will not offend me if you're reading through it, because even sometimes I have a tendency to fall asleep when someone's talking. So that's okay. Well, family, the concept of family has a lot of words we associate with it, doesn't it? It does. That video kind of alludes to in the first half, you know, can't turn back the hands of time. We look at the pictures and relive the memories, and family can be a great thing. But in the later half of that video, also we're reminded that sometimes family can be unpleasant, the concept. Now, no matter where you turn for entertainment, whether it's film or television or novels or magazines or even, you know, cartoons, this word family pops up everywhere. In our culture, family literally has hundreds of definitions. And sometimes we kind of think that in our 21st advanced society, we've kind of redefined family. But when we really do a history lesson out throughout the course of human history, family, the concept has been exhausted in its definition. There's even a couple popular TV shows out there now, Family Guy and Modern Family, that kind of try to twist the idea of family, you know, a talking dog and various things like that. And it just makes for good humor. It doesn't really help us get any clarity on what we need to have healthy families. And at the center of this whole idea of family throughout history, at the core of it has been this reality of a man and a woman, this relationship that Jesus actually draws attention to in the New Testament. Now, if we look at pop culture for cues about family life, I think what we normally see more often than not is that family life is a disaster. It really is kind of referenced that way. You know, if you listen to music, artists don't normally write songs. You don't hear a hip-hop song talking about how much they love their big brother growing up. You know, you don't really listen to a pop song about how much influence their mom and dad had and poured into their life as a child. Normally you hear the exact opposite. My life as a child was a mess. I was abused. I was abandoned. I was neglected. And that's normally the majority of pop music. Doesn't reference family in a very favorable light. The same thing's true in movies. You know, especially in comedies or even in, you know, romantic comedies. You know, I don't watch those. I'm a man, so I don't know a lot. No, I'm kidding. I watch them. They're fun. But anyways, in most comedies, at the core are a man and a woman. And in most situations, they're single. And they find each other and they experience that romantic connection, that emotion that accompanies love at the earliest point in a relationship. But normally on the peripheral, the single guy, the single girl have married friends. And all you see is that their married life, their family life is a mess. It's a disaster. They keep telling them, don't get married. It's terrible. It's awful. I mean, that's the lens we view family from in movies. In sitcoms, there's normally, not normally the main character sometimes, but in sitcoms, there's normally peripheral characters and their whole relationship is in shambles. It's just a mess. Their family life is a mess. Their kids are a mess. And they're really only there in the show because they're great comedic relief when the more main crux of the show is on the main character. So whatever it is that we intake in culture, it's not real helpful with presenting to us how we can make families, our families, healthier. Consequently, when we look at what culture is feeding us, and then we begin to compare that to what we see in the lives of people around us, it doesn't give us a very hopeful perspective on family. You know, when you look at the relationships around you, you know, when we turn to entertainment, we see family described often as a disaster. And under that filter, under that lens, we actually allow it to permeate our view of family in reality. So as a consequence of our culture and what the messages it feeds us, when we combine that with what we see around us and what we've experienced in relationships, my guess is all of us have had this thought at some point in our life. Now, maybe you would phrase it differently, but this morning I'm going to call this our pop culture question as it relates to specifically relationships, romantically enduring relationships, but really it affects every relationship that we'll ever be in throughout our lives. And it's this question on the screen. I wonder sometimes, and maybe you wouldn't word it this way, maybe you've never said it out loud, but my guess is probably all of us have felt it at one point or another. We've just wondered, what's the answer here? I wonder if sometimes, if people in love ever stay together for good. You know, I wonder, is it possible for two people in love to stay in love forever? And I think we wrestle with this question because when we look at our, maybe for you it was your parents, you look at your parents and it didn't work for them. You know, maybe they were still in the same house, but you know, they kind of had, it became a duplex with their own areas and they didn't really interact much, or maybe they got divorced. Maybe you look at some of your friends' parents and you look at their relationships and it didn't really work for them. Maybe you look at your first marriage or your second marriage or your third marriage and it didn't work there and you're still maybe hopeful it can. Maybe you look at one of your kids' relationships. Maybe they're married, maybe they're dating, and boy, things don't look good there. Or maybe you even look at another couple that you know and you thought everything was good on the surface, but then the closer you get, the cracks begin to show. And I think we wrestle with this question that we're just like, you know, I just need to know that it's possible. We just want to hold on to this glimmer of hope that it is, that the fairy tale storybook ending is possible, that two people can stay committed, but not just committed, but their love can grow, it can blossom, it can bloom, it can become better and more than what it was when it started. It's a fascinating question. Now, I don't present this to you to go home this morning and in the car as you're leaving to have a conversation with your significant other and say, you know, hey, do you think our relationship's going to last? That's probably not a wise idea, you know, because then kind of creating a negative outlook on things. And I just wonder, what do you think? Do you think this is going to work out long term, or you think this will be ready to call it quits here pretty soon? This isn't the point of bringing up this question, enter into dialogue. I think it's more for us to connect our hearts to say, yeah, you know, we kind of ponder that question. In fact, because of the statistics we see about marriage, I would guess that a lot of people ask this question when they're sitting in a wedding watching a man and a woman make eternal, lifelong vows to one another. And you ask that question, will they have what it takes to stick it out? It's funny when you reflect on your life and statistics, half of the weddings you've been to ended in divorce. That's just reality of statistics. So for every other wedding that you go to, the ending is not real positive. And we sit back sometimes and we say, well, will they make it? Will it work? Do they have what it takes to make it last? And yet, even in the midst of all this evidence, in spite of what we've seen firsthand, in spite of what we've experienced, in spite of the state of your current marriage or your current relationship and how hopeful you are for its future, in spite of statistics and what they tell us, in spite of the overwhelming evidence in our world, in spite of what you saw in your parents' marriage, in spite of what you experienced in your first marriage or your second or your third, in spite of what culture, the messages culture feeds us, in spite of all this evidence, there's still something deep down inside of you, and there's something deep down inside of me that says, we answer this question, we say, yeah, I think it is. I think it's still possible. I think it's still possible, not only possible in the greater scheme, but we actually even hold that glimmer of hope. It's still possible for me to experience. That in some way, my current relationship or a future relationship, I can experience this kind of enduring, long-lasting love. That I'm gonna meet someone, or this relationship is going to improve. It's going to get better, and we're going to die together someday. You know, we'll be holding hands at night in our sleep and we'll both die at the same minute. Or, you know, we'll be in the nursing home together and we'll be roommates and we'll take our walkers down to the, you know, the dining room together and we'll sit together and in the midst of our Parkinson's, we'll hold hands and, you know, and then we'll sit on the couch and, you know, we'll watch Dr. Phil every day and we'll just sit there and we'll just kiss and cuddle and our grandkids will come and visit us in our 90s and they'll be like, oh, wow, look at that. Look how old they are. That's disgusting, you know, and... We have this hope that we can experience that, that we'll actually get to take part in something that's enduring and long-lasting that comes to define our lives. Because deep down, we hold the reality that that's still possible. Not that it's just possible, but that it's possible for me. And you know what this is? And I don't have a verse to back this up, but I think that is the reality of the image of God implanted on our soul. That we cling to this hope that there's more. This hope that relationships, the way God's designed them, there's more to them than just the day-to-day routine. There's more to it than just surviving the years and the decades, but that relationships actually can thrive and can come to define our lives. I mean, if this is you, when you look at the pop culture question, you say, yeah, I think it's still possible. It's not easy. In fact, you might even say, you know what, I think it's possible, but it isn't probable. When we look at the evidence, the deck is stacked against us. I believe it's possible. I even believe it's possible for me. But will it happen? I don't know. I'd like to think it can. I hope it will. I hope I've got what it takes. I hope my partner, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my spouse now has what it takes to go the distance, to be committed. But honestly, I don't know. I think it's possible, but it's not probable. Now, before we go on, we need to have a little 10-second conversation about falling in love. And 10 seconds is really about all that it takes, really. Because here's the reality. The only thing required for falling in love is a pulse. Really. I mean, that's all it really takes. You can see this in a 2- and a 3-year-old that fall in love together, right? And so, for some of us in here, you fall in love with somebody that you've never even met. Right? I mean, there's an actor, there's a movie star, there's a somebody, you know, there's probably some guy in here, you fall in love with the woman that reads the news, right? And you're just, or somebody on ESPN, or you know a guy and you're single and you're just, you know, he doesn't even know you exist and you're smitten with him. I mean, we can fall in love with the craziest things. Some of us are in love with tacos, okay? All we need to fall in love is a pulse. In fact, finish this statement for me. To fall in love, I need a... Okay, we'll try that again. Now we're awake. To fall in love, I need a pulse. So for the rest of the message, as I present that phrase, I want you to shout that back at me. Now, if you Google the term matchmaker, you're actually going to find over 15 million results in Google. Now, when you look at the state of our culture and mass media and social networking, I would argue that it's never been easier to fall in love. Because you can fall in love with someone on television. You can fall in love with a food. You can fall in love with a restaurant. I mean, this concept of love is very tired. It's easier than ever to fall in love. In fact, you can give your money. You don't even have to work at it. You can just give your money to a company that then will match you with someone that almost looks like you and talks like you and thinks like you and eats like you and grew up like you grew up and has the same passions and excitements and they're just a different gender from you. And you can kind of get matched together. I mean, it's never been easier to fall in love because all it takes to fall in love is a pulse. But I would also argue, and I think you would agree, that it's never been easier to fall in love. It's never been harder to stay in love. And yet, this is what we want. This is what we crave. This is what we believe deep down, somehow, some way, is still possible for us. And even though it seems like the deck is stacked against us, even though we say it's not probable, even though we believe it's still possible, we don't want to just be locked into a relationship where it's two different separate lives. We don't want to just survive. We want relationships to thrive. And there's something within us that we believe we will finish life together with someone else. And we want to be in love. Now, it's never been easier to fall in love. It's never been harder to stay in love. And it's difficult to experience that lasting, enduring, deepening, growing love in our lives. And I think there's a few reasons for that. A couple of them. Number one, I think one of the reasons it's hard to stay in love is because most of us in this room have never experienced a deepening, growing beautiful love up close, long term. It's rare in our culture. We haven't experienced a model, so most of us, of what it is that we desire. We get close, we see the cracks. We've never seen one long term. Maybe for you, you know, your parents, they're still together and things happen and you know, but dad would rather take the dog on vacation than your mom or something. You know, you just know that it's not what you want and they're still together and there's a level of commitment there, but And when we look at what we've witnessed or what we've seen or what we've experienced, then we begin to practice what it is that we've seen modeled before us, and we often end up with the same results we've seen before. Consequently, what's modeled for us and what we repeat makes it almost next to impossible for us to experience the love that deep down we all believe is possible, we all desire. You know, most of us have learned a broken system of relationship principles. And here's what I mean by that. Some of us have grown up with this as kind of our overriding fact of relationships. Do unto others as they deserve to be done unto. Right? And treat people as they deserve it. You know, that's what they get for being that way. Or do unto others as you need to in order to get your way. Play the game. Play the politics in order to get the outcome that you desire. Accomplish your agenda. Do unto others until an upgrade comes along. Till somebody new comes along that's a better choice. Do unto others until you just get sick of looking at that person. And just the thought of them, you're just, you know what? I just can't stand it anymore. When you think about the relationships you've witnessed in your life up close and long term, when you really think about them, how many of those relationships are what you're hungering for in your life? Because most of what we've witnessed or seen growing up sets us up to be ill-equipped to have healthy relationships as adults ourselves. Now, there was a bunch of really smart people, doctors and counselors and authors and researchers and psychiatrists and psychologists, a whole bunch of psychos got together, and they created this list. And this list, and if you're one of those, I'm just kidding. Here's this list that they compiled. Now, this list that's on the screen, and it's hard to read that, childhood requirements to experience healthy adult relationships. They created this list that said, you know what, when we analyze healthy adult relationships, this is what needs to be instilled in massive quantities into the life of a child between the ages of 0 and 18 so that they can actually practice healthy relationships themselves. So when you look at this list, respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, attention, appreciation, and affection, yeah, that's the family you grew up in, right? I mean, 100% of 10 different things, you know, we're all wired differently. We all have different strengths and weaknesses. It sounds like the family you grew up in. Well, maybe you hit a couple of those. Maybe you hit a few. Maybe you hit most of them. But if this is what it takes over a long period of time poured into the life of a child so that they can have healthy adult relationships, when we entered into adulthood, we were ill-equipped for healthy, long-lasting relationships. Now, imagine this. You're good on 5 of these in your home life. And you meet someone else who's good on 5. Then at best case scenario, you got all 10, but probably there's some overlap. So you're at least lacking in 2 or 3 or 4, maybe 5. And so in how you demonstrate your relationship in these 10 areas is going to be very, very difficult. Now, here's where the handicap gets worse. Because most of us, for instance, let's say encouragement. Because most of, say many of us in here never really felt encouraged as a kid. We enter into adulthood looking for encouragement anywhere we can find it at any cost. And we begin to compromise what even might be the right thing to do so that we can feel encouraged, even maybe just temporarily. This is the difficult part of this. This is where the handicap gets worse, because we might actually enter into a relationship because we're feeling somewhat fulfilled in 2 or 3 or 4 things we've been lacking. We enter into that relationship, and that's when a nice, gentle, you know, hug around the neck turns into a stranglehold. You know, I found you because I needed security. I needed appreciation, and you're not giving it to me anymore. It lasted for a while, but I don't get any affection anymore. I fell in love with you. When are you going to give me what I wanted? Or was I just tricked by how hot you were? You know, did you just put on a mask for a while? Or was I tricked into this because of the good job and the nice security? I've got to have these things, and I expected you to give them to me. And this is when all that emotional energy that we used to feel when we first fell in love begins to fade away. And I get sick of trying to squeeze love out of you, and you get sick of trying to squeeze love out of me in the relationship. And we're left malnutritioned relationally. You know, here's a statistic. It's been the same for quite a while. This year, when we consider this list, this year 40% of children born will grow up without a male figure, a dad, in the picture. And I'm not here to cause an argument about single parents or anything like that, but what I want to do is draw attention to this. If it's hard enough for those of us that had a mom and a dad in the home to get 10 of these in massive doses, how much harder is it on those kids that only have one influence in the home that's trying to provide and meet all the needs? I mean, that's a lot to carry, and that's why kids are often shortchanged. We don't know often how to get to those kinds of relationships because they haven't been modeled for us. We're all deficient in some area when we look at this list. It's easier to fall in love than ever before, but it's harder to stay in love than ever before. The one reason? Well, because most of us haven't witnessed long-term what's required for us to experience that kind of relationship. Number two, why staying in love is difficult, I think, is because we have a lower threshold for pain relationally than in generations past. You know, it doesn't have to hurt too bad emotionally anymore for people to just say, you know what, I'm ready to get out. I'm ready to be done. Gone are the days where you say I do, and I do means I do, and it doesn't matter what happens, we're going to keep doing together, and whatever do-do comes this way, we're going to keep doing, we're going to keep going, we're going to keep moving forward together. We're not going to look for an upgrade, we're not going to look for a better option. And some of us have bought into this lie. Culture says, well, you just chose the wrong person. You just chose the wrong person. That's the problem. You're not the problem. You're perfect. You're fine. Everything with you is great. You need to get an upgrade. You chose poorly. You need to re-choose. That's the help we get from culture, which is no help at all. Here, culture does us no benefit. Culture just says, start over with somebody fresh. Then you'll get those emotions again. But what happens when they begin to fade as well? See, culture does not inform us to make wise choices. It informs us to make foolish choices connected to our deficiencies and our emotions. You know, choosing the right person has a little to do with it. But the real crux of the matter is choosing to become the right person. Because that's all you can really change through the power of the Holy Spirit. Choosing to become the right person matters much, much more. And you may want to finish that with that person. You may want to go the distance. You may want to die in the nursing home together. And it may be possible. But looking at our reality, it may be possible, but it's not probable. Now let's close in prayer and let's leave hopeless. No. Into this chaos, into this madness that we see, into what we've all experienced and seen firsthand in relationships, into the truth of the broken world in which we live in, Jesus speaks. And he speaks something powerful 2,000 years ago that's just as relevant as it is today. It was just as relevant then as it is today. And he gives us the secret for enduring relationship. He gives us the secret, you know, for the power of love, right? You don't need money. And it's so simple. This secret is so simple. It's so counter to the way that we normally think. It's counterintuitive. It's countercultural. And it actually begins to redefine everything that we think is normal. It's so simple. It's so powerful. And yet, when we look around at the relationships we've tracked with long term, it's so rare. And we find it in John chapter 13, verse 34. Jesus starts and he says this. He says, he's talking to his disciples, a new command I give you. He basically says, in addition to the Ten Commandments, in addition to the 600 plus laws throughout the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, a new command I give you. Now the Bible, if you didn't know this, was not originally written in English, okay? It predates the English language. It's translated from ancient texts. And when we look at the ancient text here for the word new, it could actually mean a number of different things in translation. It could mean, extraordinary. You know, an extraordinary command I give you, one that kind of rises to the surface, or a hidden command I give you that's been rediscovered, or maybe a remarkable is one of the best translations, a remarkable command I give you. It's almost this idea that if you just take this home and you kind of sit on it like an egg, over time it's going to hatch and you're going to begin to understand more and more what it means. He says, a remarkable command I give you. And here's his command. Ready for the depth? Love one another. And here you're like, come on, Fetter, that's all you got? You should have studied harder, man. You know, that's it? Love one another? All this chaos we've been talking about, and this is the point, this is the payoff? Love one another? The reality here is Jesus, the profoundness in this statement is that Jesus takes a word we normally associate as a noun, and he turns it as a verb. Do you see that? He takes the word love. We normally think of love like we fall into it or we fall out of it. It's a noun. I kind of equate it with the Twilight Zone. You're entering another dimension, a dimension not of time or of space, right? We can fall into the Twilight Zone and out of the Twilight Zone, and there's no control. We're just kind of a victim to it. That's how we define love. But Jesus, no, he turns it on as a verb. He says, love one another. It's an action. It's a demonstration. He says, I want you to love one another. Now, I think this gives us a little indicator of what Jesus would be like as a counselor. If you sat down with Jesus and you wanted some instruction, you and your spouse, you and your boyfriend or girlfriend, like, you know, Jesus, we each need help here. Could you give us a little direction in our relationship? He'd say, well, are you loving one another? And you would say, well, you know, we used to. No. You're talking about the Twilight Zone. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the verb. Are you loving one another? Well, you don't understand, Jesus. She does this and she does that and he's not there and he doesn't give me attention or affection. No, 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 no. No, this is how you fix it. You've got to move beyond the noun and you've got to begin to love one another. But we don't love one another. No, you're misunderstanding me. I'm not talking about being in the place. I'm talking about the verb, the action, the demonstration. That's your biggest problem. See, we define love by what we feel. And that's how relationships begin. But if we're not intentional at maturing our relationships beyond the state of emotion, when emotion fades, the hug around the neck becomes the stranglehold for what we need out of the relationship. See, all I need to fall in love is a... Okay, four people. All I need to fall in love is a pulse. Emotions are easy. And it's easy to allow emotions to dictate our decisions. It's easy to do that, but it's foolish. You ever spent money emotionally and you're like, wow, that was a bad decision. Bad decision. I was talking to somebody this past week, talking about buying a car emotionally. Then he took it back and the dealer miraculously returned it. I mean, that's kind of a miracle in and of itself. But here's where Jesus gives the solution for long-term enduring love. All I need to fall in love is a pulse, but what I need to stay in love is a plan. Jesus says, here's the plan. Love one another. Embark on this lifelong commitment with love as a verb. Don't just say it, do it. And if you want to make love last, you need to make love, pause, just because it's fun, a verb, okay? Let's say that together just because it's fun to say in church, all right? If you want to make love last, you need to make love a verb. Make love a verb. In our world, we think that in order to rediscover love, to get the feeling back, we need to start all over again with somebody new. We just need to unplug and plug into a different outlet. We need an upgrade. We crave the emotion, and we remember the honeymoon stage in the beginning of the new relationship. So we think what we need is that emotion, but we forget of all the things we've been shortchanged on, right? None of us feel emotionally stable with respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, attention, appreciation, and affection. None of us feel 100% in every area. So if we leave the relationship we're in and we start another one, we still have these deficiencies. And how are they going to be met? So meeting someone new accomplishes nothing. It just hides the root problem for a little bit longer. And that's what Satan is so good at. He's good at deceiving, at hiding things beneath the surface. And if we don't have a plan in place to make love last, we'll start another one, then someday we'll need an upgrade. And we'll go that one and ride that one for a while, and then we'll need another upgrade. You know, I've been married for 4.5 years now, and we have a little girl, Savannah, that's 14 months. We have another one on the way in about 6 or 7 weeks. And I remember when the honeymoon stage in our marriage began to fade. You know, and my wife, you know, she's down in tiny steps. She can't hear this right now, so don't tell her. But anyways, I remember when the honeymoon stage began to fade. And the reason I knew it was fading wasn't so much emotionally. That's not one of my strengths at all. But I remember because my beautiful, attentive wife allowed me to see that it was fading. She's brought it to my attention. And I remember it specifically because one day after we'd been married right about a year, maybe 10 months, 12 months, she made, in a playful way, she made this statement because she wasn't getting all of my attention and affection at one moment. And she just said it, and she said it this way: I know you love me, but why don't you love me? And I remember giggling about that, and we poked fun at that. I was like, I don't even know what that means. I know you love me, but why don't you love me? I mean, using the same word twice? And the more that it sat, and the more I prepared for this message, I've seen the profoundness in this statement, that we all pretty much live it on a regular basis. On that day, Jesus kind of spoke to me through my wife, and I didn't really understand the grasp of what she was saying until I was preparing for this message. And I think what's amazing is you've probably felt this way at one time or another. You felt this: I know you love me. I know you're committed. I know you're in the twilight zone with me. I know that you care about me. I know you love me, but why don't you, as Jesus used the word as a verb, love me? Why have you stopped showing me? Why have you stopped demonstrating it? Why isn't it so hard for me to see the reality of this place you say you're in? Why isn't it more than a word? Why isn't it an action? Here's one thing I've learned about making love a verb. And I'll tell you here, but it's a secret. I will never utter it again. And if you tell anybody else I said it, I'll deny it. But the more you make love a verb, the more you'll make love. I've learned that. That's just the reality of the situation. The more you demonstrate, the more beautiful it is. But you didn't hear that from me. Jesus says love is something that you do. It's something that you demonstrate. Now here's your challenge this week. Stop making love a noun. Stop making it a place that you go and hang out in for a little bit. Because it's not a location anyone can spend their entire life at. Because emotions sometimes deceive us. Stop making love a noun. Start making it a verb. Because it's never been easier to fall in love. All you need for that's a pulse. And it's never been harder to stay in love, which means we need a plan. And the wisdom of having a plan and making love a verb is not the kind of help we get from culture. We have to go to a higher authority to get that kind of assistance. In our culture, we're recommended just to bail. Walk away. Find an upgrade. Just give up and find somebody new. Walk away rather than sort through it. And Jesus helps us realize this with the rest of this verse. He says this: "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." Here he uses the word as a verb every time. He says, hey, disciples, followers, church, world, take your cues from me. As I have loved you. Look at the way I've loved you, and then love one another that same way, both romantically, but in every relationship that you find yourself in, demonstrate it. And if you do it the way I've laid out for you, you'll experience relationships more beautiful than you could ever imagine on your own. And you can create the kind of love that is rare. You know, as we close, there's a biblical truth here about humanity. And it's this very easy to understand phrase: emotion follows devotion. It does. You devote yourself to someone over time, and the level that you passionately care about them deepens, and it becomes greater and greater and greater. That's why so often we find it easier to love our kids and forgive them faster than we do our spouses, our partners, boyfriend or girlfriend. We kind of hold on to things, and we kind of allow them to sit within us, and bitterness rises up because we extend more grace to our kids than we do romantic relationships. See, Jesus challenges us to be devoted to him first, to the spouse second, to the kids third, in that order, and then the world around us. Jesus models that for us, promises if we do it his way, we will be abundantly rewarded and thankful. Now today, this morning, has kind of been an introduction of where we're going throughout this series on Modern Family. And we're going to talk about more practical ways to do this over the next 3 weeks. In fact, in 2 weeks, on February 5th, there's a wrestling tournament at the other end of the high school. So we're actually going to get to enjoy the puppet theater here on stage with our kids ministry. And kids that are over the age of 4 will actually be in the service with us. And we're going to talk about family dynamics in 2 weeks. But this is a 4-week series, and we're just kind of diving in. This is the introduction. Kind of the overriding principle here is if we want to make love last, we have to make love a verb, because it's never been easier to fall in love. It's never been harder to stay in love. You fall in love with a pulse. You stay in love with a plan. Let's pray. Lord God, the truth of your word is fascinating. And God, there's so many places, like right here in John 13, that if we're not careful, we'll slip right by us. And we'll miss the profound truth you're trying to reveal to us. See, God, we live in a culture that burdens us, that just bombards us with a lie. That love is a place that we go and hang out for a little bit, but once the emotion fades, we move on to the next place. But your word says, no, that's not how we were created. It's not how we were designed. And the remnant of our design, the remnant of the image of God, shows us that we desire something greater, something more. We desire a love that lasts.
Thank you for listening to the Fusion Community Church's podcast. For more information about our church, please visit our website at fusioncommunitychurch.org.